Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50, Krishna establishes Dwaraka. Today's text 18 through 28. So we'll have fun chanting all the verses. We'll start with the first verse we can do responsibly. Word meanings, Tava Yor, Rama, O Balaram, Yadi, if. Shraddha, confidence, yudhyasva, fight, dhairyam, courage, udvaha, take up, hitva, leaving aside, va, either, mat, my, sharai, by the arrows, chinnam, cut to pieces, deham, your body, swaha, to heaven, yahi go, mom, or else me, jahi kill. So this is Jarasandha speaking to Ram, Lord Balaram. Tavarama yadishadha. Yadhyasva dhairyam udvaha hitva va mascharaishchinnam deham swaryahi mam jahi. Tavarama yadi shraddha yudhyasva dhairyam udva hitva va machcharaischinnam deham swaryahi mam jahi. Tavarama yadi shraddha yudhyasva dhairyam udva hitva va mascharaischinnam deham swaryahi mam jahi.
Swaryahi mam jahi.
Door closed here. I closed this one because it was so drafty, but I still feel like I'm in a wind tunnel here. So. Okay, translation. So this is again Durasanda speaking. You, Rama, should gather your courage and fight with me if you think you can do it. You may either give up your body when it is cut to pieces by my arrows, and thus attain to heaven, or else kill me. Purport. According to Acharya Sridhar Swami, Durasanda suspected that Lord Balaram's body was indestructible, and thus he offered what might be a more practical alternative, that Balaram killed Durasanda. As he said, I'll kill you or send you to heaven, or you can kill me. So the purport is that's the more likely outcome. So now we have a bunch of verses to chant here, from 19 to 28. What I'd like to do, actually I wanted to mention, I think there's a bit of a misconception about Sanskrit pronunciation and Prabhupada's feelings about it. Devotees seem to have an attitude sometimes that Prabhupada didn't care because he figured we're all lost causes anyway. So. But actually, when Prabhupada first introduced the Bhagavatam classes, he really drilled on it. And there is some Lokanath Swami. He wrote a book about Sanskrit pronunciation, which is kind of maybe too high a level, I think, for most devotees. But there he has several places where he shows how Prabhupada corrected devotees. I myself have heard on the tape, for example, there's one morning walk where devotee says Prabhupada's pranam mantra. He says, Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna. Prabhupada says, no, Padaya. Not Padaya, Padaya. So it's not that Prabhupada wasn't concerned. He paid attention and he listened, and when devotees made mistakes, he would correct them. There's another, actually, I just came across this in a letter recently. Apparently, maybe the devotee wrote it in the letter, I don't know, but Prabhupada said, he said, it's not Saraswati, it's Saraswate. So there are two mistakes devotees make. This isn't Prabhupada's pranam mantra. I always feel like, yeah, at least maybe we should get that right, you know, after so many years. So in Prabhupada's pranam mantra, it's not Saraswati, we're not offering obeisances to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, it's Saraswate. For their tooth, so the first thing is that the first A is a long A. Ah. This is lesson number one, day number one in Sanskrit pronunciation. If you go to the back of our books, you'll see there's a difference between a short A and a long A. For most devotees, if they would just learn this one thing, the difference between a long A and a short A. So here it says a short A is as in but. So And then the long A is as in far, ah. So it's a difference between and ah. And ah. Just like the doctor says, open your mouth and say ah. So that's the sound. Now here it says held twice as long. That's a little too subtle for me to figure out. But the sound is, your mouth is just open a little more. And ah. Now of course I think sometimes in the West also we have a tendency, we go a little too far and we say ah. Especially the British, they have a Jagannath and Prabhupada, and it gets a little too much of the ah sound there. So it's not ah, but it's ah. Just think of it as A-W, ah, and then a short A, ah. So it's not Saraswati, it's Saraswati. And it's not T, it's Te, because of the grammar of the verse. So Prabhupada pointed that out in one letter, that it's Saraswate. And also when Prabhupada was first teaching devotees to chant the verses, he wanted devotees to chant. This comes up often. He introduced the system, you all chant. And there's one, Lokanath Swami has it in his book, and I've also heard it. where Prabhupada is doing it line by line. He's having each devotee, and then he keeps correcting them. No, it's like this. Then he repeats it. Then they do it again. He says, no. And it's hard to tell from the transcript what they're doing wrong, but something they're doing wrong. He probably says, no. And it went over and over and over again. I don't know how many times he did it, line by line, the whole verse. Then he had each person chant it. Then he corrected them if they did it wrong. So he definitely was, definitely there was some concern that devotees learned how to pronounce the Sanskrit. So today I thought we'd go through this. I'm going to do it very slowly. Try to get the A's right. Actually, another second lesson I was going to point out, which in today's verse, there was the word chinnam. It has two N's in it. So when you have two consonants together, the same letter, then you have to actually pronounce both of them. It's not chinnam, it's chinnam. You can hear it, chinnam. So just like Dori Brahmabhuta Prasannatma, it's not Prasannatma, it's Prasannatma. So that's so two lessons today. Long A and short A, and two N's together. You have to say both of them. You don't put a space between them, but you can hear the difference. Chinnam. So we'll go through these verses. We'll chant. I think what I'd like to do, now is it hard to keep up, Madame Mohan, if I just do all the Sanskrit? Because sometimes there seems to be, I seem to be ahead of everybody. Maybe I should just look up here and see. So we're going to chant it solely, all the Sanskrit, and then at the end we'll do the translation. Now one thing I have to confess to, I'm not exactly sure. When there's an aspirated H, the H with a dot under it, so at the end of the line it seems like it's pretty easy to say aha or ihi. But when it comes in the middle of the line, I kind of have a hard time figuring out how to do that exactly. You do it the same way, but not... It's not pronounced. Oh, because I hear devotees pronounce it. Mahamaya?
It's actually only at the end of the second and the fourth line. Because that's the end of the line in
Sanskrit. Oh, but we paused there, so... Yeah, I understand what you're saying technically, because there are actually only two lines of Sanskrit, although we have it written as four. So technically, if it would come in the middle, at the end of the first line, it would actually be in the middle of the first Sanskrit line. But when we chant, we pause there, so it seems like we could do it. Yeah. Anyway, I guess you didn't understand my explanation. The reason for these rules is so that it flows smoothly. So I'm saying if you are going to stop at the end of the line anyway, you might as well aspirate it. That was my point. Because usually you run the whole thing together, that's what I'm saying. But we don't do it that way. If we were chanting two Sanskrit, you know, the whole first Sanskrit line together, then I could see the reason for it. But because we're breaking at the end of each line, the aspiration. Anyway, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. I'm just saying it. This is just logic. So we'll do it slowly. Those of you who like to go like high-speed train, you'll have to bear with us. So, because I'm trying to, what my point here is that we should, one of the problems that I know that devotees do in Sanskrit, they don't read what's there. That's the problem. We don't actually look and see what's there. Or we learned some verse many years ago, so we always say it that way. And even when we're reading it, when we're giving class, we don't say it right because we have it in our mind a certain way. So just look and see what's there. It's not a bad idea to open up a songbook once in a while and see how samsara dava nalalita loka is pronounced, you know, the whole prayers. Because after so many years, you think, well, gee, maybe we should take a little pause for a few minutes and learn how to pronounce these prayers that we're saying every day. So I myself, at least I'm conscious of it. I know I still make mistakes, but it's something I try to do. So I'm just encouraging, because it is something. It's not that Prabhupada didn't care. He actually did care about it. He wanted the devotees to learn how to pronounce these things properly. It's actually, I know myself, sometimes I feel a little embarrassed when people really slaughter the Sanskrit, and I think there may be people in the audience, especially Indian people, they may be thinking, what is this person saying? What kind of? And it's actually, you know, we're saying, this is Krishna's praise with Uttama Shloka. So if the shloka is gibberish, then well, that's not very nice, you know. It's when they call that a left-handed compliment. So when you say something, you're trying to glorify Krishna, but you're, who knows what you're saying. Even Prabhupada, he kind of chuckled when he said it. He said, sometimes they say Garu instead of Guru, or Guru, excuse me. Well, either one. He said, this is me. What does it mean? A horse or an ass, one or the other. If you say Garu instead of Guru, so you can make little mistakes that can mean the opposite, you know, who knows what. So we'll begin here with text 19. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Navaishura Vaikatane Darshayantyeva Kaurusham Nagrinimo Vachorajam Naturasya Mumurshatah. Shri Shuka Uvacha Jarasutastava Bhishrishya Madhavau Mahabharao Gena Bhadiya Sarno Sasanyayana Dvajiva Dishadati Suyana Lavayuri Vabra Renu Bihi. Forget the melody. Na 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 na. Okay. Suparnatala dvajachinnatarata alakshayantyo hariyamayomrithe sriyapuratta lakahanya gopuram samashrita sammumuhu suchargita hariparanika Hayo muchamuhu shili muku yubana varsha pidam swasanyamalopya sura surarchitam yahupanas charnda sarasanuktamam dhanani sangarata sandadat charam Krishnam Cham Shitabana Puran Ignam Ritam Kunjara Vajipatim Nirantaram Yadvat Alata Chakram Yatinna Kumbha Karino Nipetur Anekasho Svastara Vikna Kandara Vrata-tashva-dvaja-suta-nāyaka Padāyata-shchinnā-bhujo-rukhandara Sanchidyamāna-dvipa-deha-vājinām Aṅgā-prasuta-tata-shoshvidhāpaka Ujāya-purusha-shirshya-tpachapā Hata dhupa dhvipa haya grahakula Rurumina narakesha saivala Tanushtaram rayudha bhuma sankula Achyurikavarcha bayana kama Mani praveka varanashma sankala Bhiru Payavaha Mide Manasinam Harsha Kari Parasparam Dinevantam Vishen Rumadam Sankarsanina Parimeya Tejasa Alantaram Varnava Durva Bhairavam Durantaparam Sayam pranitam vasudeva putrayo ikrivitam tachakati shalokam. Thank you. That was nice. So translation, beginning with text 19. The Supreme Lord said, Actually, he's speaking to Balaram, and then it just says the Supreme Lord said, so you're not sure who's replying. But in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says Krishna is speaking here. The Supreme Lord said, real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and who wants to die. Sukadeva Goswami said, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Madhu and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses, and charioteers. Did I get that right? And with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses, and charioteers. It was mentioned, I guess it was earlier, that Krishna came out with only a small contingent of soldiers, Krishna and Balaram. Purport, Acharya Sridhar points out that the clouds only seem to cover the sun. The sun remains shining in the vast sky, nor is the potency of fire affected by a thin covering of dust. Similarly, the covering of Jarasandha's military strength was only apparent. The women stood in the watchtowers, palaces, and high gates of the city. When they could no longer see Krishna's and Balaram's chariots, identified by banners marked with the emblems of Garuda and a palm tree, they were struck with grief and fainted. Purport, the women are especially mentioned here because of their extraordinary attachment to Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Seeing his army tormented by the relentless and savage rain of arrows from the massive opposing forces gathered like clouds about him, Lord Hari twanged his excellent bow, Sharanga, which both gods and demons worship. Lord Krishna took arrows from his quiver, fixed them on the bowstring, pulled back, and released endless torrents of sharp shafts which struck the enemy's chariots, elephants, horses, and infantrymen. The Lord's shooting his arrows resembled a blazing circle of fire. Elephants fell to the ground, their foreheads split open. Cavalry horses fell with severed necks. Chariots fell with their horses, flags, drivers, and masters all shattered. And foot soldiers collapsed with severed arms, thighs, and shoulders. On the battlefield, hundreds of rivers of blood flowed from the limbs of the humans, elephants, and horses who had been cut to pieces. In these rivers, arms resembled snakes, human heads, turtles, dead elephants, islands, and dead horses, crocodiles. Hands and thighs appeared like fish, human hair like water weeds, bows like waves, and various weapons like clumps of bushes. The rivers of blood teemed with all of these. Chariot wheels looked like terrifying whirlpools, and precious gems and ornaments resembled stones and gravel in the rushing red rivers, which aroused fear in the timid, joy in the wise. With the blows of his plow weapon, the immeasurably powerful Lord Balaram destroyed Mugadendra's military force. And though this force was as unfathomable and fearsome as an impassable ocean, for the two sons of Vasudeva, the lords of the universe, the battle was hardly more than play. So, we have this beautiful scene. One thing I found interesting was, when I read the first, it says that the scene aroused fear in the timid. So I thought the opposite was going to be and joy in the courageous or something. But it doesn't say that. It says joy in the wise. So the wise, I think the word here was muninam, manasvinam. So the manasvinam, the intelligent, they can appreciate that this is part of Krishna's lila. Just as people can't understand Rasa Lila, Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, they can't understand Krishna's pastimes with Dharasandha. They can't understand Krishna's pastimes at all, actually, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this pastime is just as glorious of any of them as any of Krishna's pastimes. Whatever he does, it's wonderful, it's purifying. Now this horrible scene, it's being witnessed. In one of the earlier verses it says the ladies are standing up outside. They had a ringside seat. Quite interesting to be able to witness the spectacle, which is so violent, bloody, ghastly. But be standing in a safe place to be able to watch it. So they're watching it, and they're, of course, they fainted. The ladies fainted. But others who are observing, they're appreciating the pastimes of the Lord, taking pleasure in it. And even though it's so horrible looking, those who are the most learned, they know that everyone who's being killed here is being liberated by the mercy of Krishna and Balaram. They're being killed by the Lord. So they're being liberated from material existence. And very quickly, 23 Akshruhinis. We read this, I think, whoa. And Dharasandha kept coming back with this many of soldiers. And Kurukshetra, there were what? 11 on one side and 8 on the other? Is that what the numbers were? Something like that? 11 and 9. So only 20 at Kurukshetra. Here we had 23. So, and then Dharasandha kept bringing them back. Said that Krishna didn't kill him because Krishna came to kill. That was his mission. Bhubhara, to lift the burden of the earth. Bhubhara. So to lift the burden of the earth, that was part of Krishna's mission. That's what he told Balaram. He said, now it's time for us to get to work here. We came to clear up this mess, lighten the earth's burden. So Dharasandha is doing some great service here. He's bringing them right to our door. We don't even have to go out looking for them. He's going to bring them by the millions to us. We just have to stay at home and do our work. Don't even have to commute to our jobs. We can just do our job. So we see how they do it. Krishna is working his bow so quickly that there's an interesting phrase here. Alata chakram. Alata chakram. It means the Lord shooting his arrows resemble the blazing circle of fire. Does anybody by any chance, probably Pushkar knows, know where this verse appears? This phrase appears in another place? Alata chakram. That's right. In fact, it's even in the translation, I think. See, it, Lord appeared like a circle. Yeah, same word. Alata chakram, which means a circle of fire. Because just like if you have a stick of incense in the dark and you move it quickly, well, it looks like a circle. So it said that when Lord Chaitanya was dancing at Rath Yatra, that's what he looked like. The effulgent Lord, the way he was dancing, he looked like this Alata Chakram. So here we have another example of Alata Chakram. Krishna was shooting his bow so quickly that it just looked like it was arched continually. And because it was going so fast, it looked like fire. He was showing his quiver, of course, he has an inexhaustible quiver, never runs out of arrows. So he can just keep firing and firing and firing. And Balaram also, of course, he's fighting with his club. And then Krishna also fights with a club sometimes. What is his club's name? Kalmodaki, right? Kalmodaki. I was trying to remember the name. He has a shield. Krishna has a shield with thousands of moons on it, which is, what's that called? Like Sahasra Chandra or something like that. Like, it has a name that has the descriptive. And he has a sword also, which has a name. I forget what the names of them. They all have names, of course, and they're all persons. When Krishna calls them, they arrive in person. We're especially familiar with, of course, Sudarshan. There are pastimes about Sudarshan in his personal form. There's one pastime of him being, Sudarshan being proud and having his pride defeated by Hanuman. So Krishna has his weapons, and Actually, Krishna is non-different from his weapons. He's non-different from his energy. So they're identical to him. Part of his, one would think, they're part of his internal potency. So they are as powerful as he is, and they act on his order to help him in his pastime. So this, we see how this Jarasandha, he's emblematic of the demons, so proud, puffed up. But so he's challenging Krishna and Balaram. First, he doesn't want to fight with Krishna. He says all these bad things about him, which the acharyas interpret as glorifying Krishna. Then he says, "All right, Ram, you're more my equal, and I'll fight with you. But I'll probably kill you, but maybe you'll kill me." But it's interesting in the where it says here, actually Lord Ram, or Krishna replies, "We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and wants to die." That's the way it's translated. In the translation, in the word for word, it says, "one who is about to die." So either he wants to die or he's about to die. He wants to die, of course, because he wants to fight with Lord Balaram. So he has a death wish, as we say. And he's about to die. So what is the value of those words? And heroes don't just boast. This comes up in the pastime of Lord Varaha also. He's taunting Hiranyaksha. He's just talking like a big hero. But real heroes, they don't have to say anything. They just fight. They show it. Anybody can say anything. Probably would say it's just like the dog. The dog is barking. But if you go, "Hut!" then the dog goes, at least Prabhupada can make dogs do that. Sometimes devotees tried to imitate it and weren't as successful. But dogs and monkeys, you have to have a stick. The stick is in that Shriyakanta Kanta Paramapurusha Kalpataravo Druma Bubish Chintamani, in that one of that long shloka at the end of the Brahma Samhita. So there it says the constant attendant is the flute. But now if you go to Vrindavan, the constant attendant should be a stick. You want to have a stick. Prabhupada said, I was hearing one lecture, he was describing this. He said, actually they know, they're afraid. Monkeys and dogs. If you have a stick, then they're somewhat intimidated by that stick. Of course, Krishna doesn't need a stick. He can intimidate. He puts fear in the supposedly fearless. He is feared by fear personified, it said. And of course, the paradox is he's afraid of Mother Yashoda. But generally, everybody is afraid of him. Whether in person or not, they may not be afraid of his, if they look at Krishna with two hands playing a flute. People who don't know Krishna may say, well, who's going to be afraid of some 16-year-old boy playing a flute? So, well, then we can show the other side of Krishna. Krishna's other side, he showed Arjuna. Arjuna was afraid when he saw Krishna's other side. Just like the material energy also has different faces to show. We're having, like Haridas Thakur, he saw one face of Maya Devi, so attractive. He wasn't attracted, but she was. You can just imagine all of the attractiveness of the material energy put into a feminine form, how attractive that will be. And that's what we're attracted to. I think it's very beautiful. I don't know if I've seen this or I was just imagining it, but the idea is that you're looking, just like a model, models they pose for the camera. They take all these poses. They look very beautiful. So you can just imagine some beautiful model, and people are watching her, and she's stunningly beautiful, but she has her mouth closed the whole time. So she has just a little smile. And then there's a close-up, and she opens her mouth, and all her teeth are yellow and black and rotted and falling out. And then you say, ah! It's just like it's embarrassing if you're a man. You're looking at somebody with long hair from behind and you're a little attracted, and they turn around and it's a man. You know. So material energy is actually like this, actually. We're attracted. We think it's so beautiful. But the other side, Maya Devi can show her beautiful form. But on the other side, we have Durga. Durga. Kali. Read the story of Jadabharat. So he was kidnapped by these dacoits. They wanted someone to sacrifice. So they kidnapped him, basically, and they were going to sacrifice him before God as Kali. So she wasn't going to stand for that. That's another gruesome scene. You read about that. Read that pastime. Kali and her associates, they just started chopping off heads. Not just chopping them off, but drinking the blood, guzzling it down. So that's another side of Kali. Just imagine her, how ferocious she can be. That's another side of the material energy we don't like to look at. We see the beautiful side, but the horrible side is there. So Krishna can show his beautiful form. We're trying to be attracted to that beautiful form of Krishna. Somehow or other, inconceivably, the attraction is not there, at least on the level that it should be. We're attracted to the reflection. And that one of the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam says, it's like light reflected into darkness. So you get some light there, but not the full. It's like now we're seeing outside. There's light, but where's the sun? We're not seeing the sun. But when you see this full sun, then what a difference it is. You really can't look so powerful. So the attractiveness of Krishna is actually overpowering when we're qualified to see. But if we have demoniac qualities lingering within us, then we can't appreciate. We want to challenge. We're always challenging in some way by not surrendering to Krishna, not taking shelter of Krishna. So even pastimes like this, we know that we have to surrender. Sharanam. Actually, Prabhupada translates the word sharanam as surrender. Surrender unto me. Mam ekam sharanam braja. But sharanam means shelter. So when Prabhupada's saying surrender, maybe he's meaning it in that more gentle way. Sometimes you think of surrender as something that's forced. You're forced to surrender when the police come with sirens blaring and guns drawn. You have to surrender, put your hands up. You have no choice. So, but taking shelter is a voluntary thing. Really, that's what Krishna wants. He wants us to voluntarily take shelter of him. Come into my shelter. We have even in the Christian saints, in the statues, like they have the Blessed Virgin. She has her hands out. Like a mother, come to me. So, I heard that Prabhupada, he liked the, Prabhupada never liked to see Jesus on the cross. He didn't like that. He thought it was grotesque. Why are they portraying the guru like this? On the cross, nailed to a cross. But he saw there's a statue of the risen Christ. So it was glorious, his hands are in the air, maybe ascending into heaven. So, looks more attractive. So Krishna is attractive in his beautiful two-armed form. But devotees, they can see him as Krishna in all of his pastimes. Keshava Dhrita, Narahari Rupa, Jai Jagadisha Hare. Even when he's Narahari, to Hiranyakashipu, then he's horrible, most fearful. Gruesome form. His mouth is covered with intestines hanging out of his mouth, and his hands and blood everywhere. His mane is covered with blood. And Prahlad is thinking, oh, Keshava, oh my Lord, you're so beautiful. He's appreciating Krishna because of his bhakti, his love for Krishna. So all of these pastimes, we hear it, we're getting such a variety, such a depth of Bhagavatam, information about Bhagavan. We can see so many sides of Krishna, multifaceted jewel. You have a really nice polished jewel with so many facets, so many sides to it, and you shine a light on it, so each side it shows a little different kinds of colors of light. Very beautiful. Like the Syamantaka jewel was so beautiful. Jamavan's little boy was playing with it, shining everywhere in the cave. So Krishna's a multifaceted jewel. And devotees with their bhakti, they can appreciate all these different pastimes. So Shukadeva Goswami, sometimes people think, oh, well, people must have a hard heart to be able to listen to something like this. What are you, you're just so cold, hard-hearted, and jaded that you can listen to some people being slaughtered like this? Or they think, oh, you're just immoral because you're listening, you're reading about this boy and his girlfriends. So it means that they don't understand. Because who is taking pleasure in these things? Shukadeva Goswami, Vyasadeva, the most pure-hearted souls. There, Shukadeva Goswami, the Naishtika Brahmachari, liberated soul, he's hearing about, speaking about romantic affairs. So what does he have to do with romance? He has nothing to do with romance, licentious behavior. He has nothing to do with these things. These things are way, way gone from his consciousness. But he's relishing Krishna and the gopis. So the same thing with violence. It's not that the devotees are violent in their hearts because they're enjoying Krishna's slaughtering. No, it's Krishna. Krishna's playing. Natacharyam nivagya, like an actor on the stage. He's performing. So devotees say, oh, my Lord is such a great actor. He can play so many roles, and he really gets into it. He becomes, sometimes the critics, when they review an actor, the actor does, they became the person. You could see the person come alive through this actor. He or she was portrayed so excellently. So Krishna actually loses himself in his roles. He tells the Lila Shakti, you arrange everything, you be the choreographer and the director, and I'm just going to forget that I'm God and everything else, and I'm just going to get into the role. So devotees appreciate these things. They find it ecstatic to see Krishna performing all of these things. And with their eyes tinged with the salve of love, they relish them. So we have finished our Vrindavan Leela, but there's still lots of nectar in Krishna's Dwaraka Leela also. We see many different sides of Krishna's multifaceted personality. So I'll stop here. I won't read through all the verses. That'll take another 5 minutes or so to do. Well, any questions or comments? Keshavadrita?
Correction.
Correction, okay.
I said earlier that there were 11 and 9 Akshahini. But actually, Krishna Dharma's Mahabharata says 11 and 7. 7 for the Pandavas.
Jamashtami Guru.
Hare Krishna. Very nice class. The Acharyas describe how there's a build-up, you know, from the Bhagavatam, where we're becoming increasingly qualified so that we can understand Radha Krishna's pastimes and the whole mood of the gopis. So then there's kind of like we hit a crescendo. And then, you know, how do the Acharyas describe, you know, kind of the rest of the Bhagavatam, how that all fits together in terms of allowing us to come to a higher level of realization?
We have the epilogue. That's what the one thing is. I've read this. I think maybe it's in the Tattva Sandarbha. But it's not that every canto. There are ten subjects in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we shouldn't think the first canto is the first subject, the second canto is the second subject, the third canto is the third subject. but they're mixed in here. There's more emphasis in certain cantos in certain places, but we come across various topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam in different places. So even the tenth subject, which is Ashraya, which is Krishna, we also hear, of course, something about Krishna even in the first canto. So there is a gradual progression and a purification. And the explanations I've heard of it are always about getting us to the tenth canto so we can understand Krishna's lila. And then the other two cantos are, as I said, they're epilogue. And some of the same, there's a lot of glorification of Krishna, especially in the 12th canto. At the very end, glorification of the Bhagavatam, glorification of Krishna. But the 10th canto is the heart and soul of the Bhagavatam, really, ultimately. And the other two cantos are just filling out the picture, giving more information. Actually, I thought you were going to ask, well, if we've already reached the top in Rasa Lila, now are we going downhill because we're going to Dwarka Lila now? But we have to see that it's all, for one thing, Krishna, when he comes to the world, he progresses in a normal age. His ages progress as a normal human. He acts like a normal human being, so naturally, if we're going to hear about his whole life, the most intimate pastimes took place in Vrindavan, but we're going to hear about Dwarka too. So just in the ordinary practical sense, the Dwarka Lila is going to follow the Vrindavan Lila. Even in one sense, it's not exactly on the same level as the Rasa Lila, but it's just a practical presentation.
It does seem that there's, you know, like 11th canto, there's an awful lot of discussion about how devotees can increase their qualification.
Mm.
You know, it goes even further, maybe, than...
Yeah, cultivating bhakti so we can understand even more. We're reiterating, going back and reviewing the lesson. And the Uddhava Gita, it's amazing. It's an amazing book in itself. Longer than the Bhagavad Gita, the Uddhava Gita. And yeah, there's a lot in there about bhakti. And in other places also, by other teachers. Something else? I have no idea what time it is. We need a clock back here. Okay, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.